Welcome to the Corey and Kai Podcast, presented by Cedar Run Decoy Company. Built on honoring traditions and focused on conservation. You can find us at cedarrundecoys.com, Facebook, and Instagram. Be sure to rate us and subscribe to the Corey and Kai Podcast on Spotify, Apple Podcast, or any other podcast platform you listen through. So on location, as we're outside of the shop, outside of the lair for another round of podcasts.
We took it on the road. We've done a lot of the road tripping.
And I like it.
Yeah. This is a unique spot, though, because we're up in northeastern Michigan. So we're in an area that most people probably haven't been to. I would describe it as like, I don't want to give, well, I mean, they know where you're from, right, Connor? I mean, you can just look it up and be like, yeah, he's in West Branch, Michigan. So we're not giving away locations by getting that precise, right?
Oh, well, now everybody knows.
Well, no, he can edit that out, right?
No, let her fly, whatever.
All right. So yeah, we're up in up near West Branch, Michigan with Connor. Okay, this is the next thing I wanted to talk. Connor, go.
Close. It's like cough, but with a G.
Called it.
Yep. So it should be. It looks like it should be G-O-F-F, but
I've had it wrong this whole time.
So I've said it. It was racking my brain. These guys can vouch for me. I was like, "How is it not golf? Because it's like cough, but with a G."
Right.
It's one of those things. Like any other word that's spelled that way is pronounced differently, other than cough. You know, like dough.
Right.
Would be. So you could use the same argument. Gouge. Groff. I'm like. There's no R, I guess. Golf, like, okay.
So Connor Goff.
Yep.
Okay. Well, and again, we talked about
the quarterback for the Lions, but just spelled differently.
Man, I don't even watch the Lions. I don't even know who their quarterback is.
Good answer.
It's embarrassing.
Really good answer.
It's embarrassing. Yeah.
Is it, though? You're too busy in the fall to be paying attention to
football.
Because
I grew up, and honestly, I mean, I played sports my whole life. I love watching sports. I've worked around, you know, baseball fields, golf courses.
Yeah.
I love sports. It's a great thing for, really, America. It brings people together. But, yeah, I mean, we're so busy, and I'm on the road so much that anytime I'm in the truck that I could potentially stream a game, I'm on the phone talking to people or calling farmers, talking to clients that, man, it's tough to keep up on sports unless it's an off season. And even then, it's like I'm on the road a lot and traveling. And I'd rather be present with people and getting these experiences than living through a TV, if we're being totally honest. It's that's kind of more of my angle. So
There's a
you're living your dream in real life instead of watching someone else's dream.
Oh, look at that. Poster board material right there.
I don't mean to talk down on people that watch sports at all, because I think it's a great thing, like I said, that people can, you know, come together and watch sports, go to sporting events or cheer on family members or whatever the case may be. It's a great thing, but it's just,
It's kind of like, why do we go duck hunt, right? Like a lot of it's for that camaraderie and enjoyment of it, and the same reason people watch football or go to the game. I mean, same reasons.
And that's why there's duck hunting on TV, you know, for the guys that have to work a 9-to-5 job and hate their life sometimes, and they're just watching on the TV all day long.
Yeah. Just getting ready for that fix.
That's right.
So did you grow up in this area?
Yeah. So you know I was born and raised here. My dad's a state trooper in town. My mom's a school teacher. We don't really have too terribly much family up here. We're kind of spread out all over the state. But my grandma, and going back on her side, like my great grandparents on my mom's side, they kind of pioneered, I guess, up this way, you know, in the early 1900s, and they've been here a long time. So I really do have a pretty good bit of hunting heritage along that side of my family, for my great grandpa and grandpa, and then even hunting with my mom, some of the places she grew up hunting with her family. So that's been pretty cool.
So was your mom a hunter?
Yeah, and she still is.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow, that's awesome.
She's a vegetarian, but she's a hunter.
You gotta parse that out for me.
Cause...
So she did always teach us growing up, you know, you're not to be just whacking all sorts of stuff just to kill it, you know, obviously with her not eating anything. So anything that we would kill, she would always teach us to process. And obviously I'm the furthest thing from a vegetarian. If it bleeds, I'll eat it. But, you know, we were just brought up that way, that she always would teach us to process anything. We shot birds, fish, deer, you know, anything. I mean, she's the one that taught me how to gut a deer and taught me how to process a deer and all that stuff. It's pretty cool to have family that's able to teach you those things.
Well, so and your mom. I mean, yeah, I don't know if I've ever heard of that. It's always, you know, the dad.
So, and don't get me wrong. I mean, we hunted with my dad a little bit and some of his buddies, but he's still at this point. I mean, he doesn't really hunt at all anymore. And my mom still deer hunts and stuff to this day. And she's cool. Just not much for like the party hunting and stuff like that. So she's always in my ear like, hey, if you get a day that you have a small group of guys, you know, I'd love to go duck and goose hunt. But trying to find a small group of guys on a weekend for a school teacher. Right.
Is her enjoyment with it, like the ability to get outdoors and enjoy that aspect of it? Because like, why is she harvest? Like, she actually harvests animals. She just doesn't go out and like watch them.
Sure,
right?
Sure. So. And honestly, I'm to this point too. It's not about the killing for me at all. Right. Granted, it's hard to say that and own a guide service, because if you are a guide service that doesn't kill anything, now all of a sudden you're a Sunrise Charter and nobody wants to pay for that. So, you know, we can go on butterfly tours, Sunrise Charters, whatever you want, but you're going to fizzle out pretty quick. But you know, you have to focus more on that experience, the people you're around, nature. I mean, when you're out in nature as many days as we are, whether it be at scouting or, you know, in the field actually hunting, you see so many more things that many people never get to witness. I mean, case in point, the turkey hunt even this spring where, you know, we had a hen and a tom bust out of the woods right next to us that bred right there, like 10 yards from the blind. And it's just one of those things. It's like, hang on, like we're here to kill a turkey, but This was really cool.
I had an emu try and attack me one time when I was out in the middle of the night going out to duck band, popped out of a cornfield.
Why is there not a video of this?
I've got a picture. I mean, this is like right at the point in time where smartphones could capture real good videos. Oh, yeah. It chased me down the road, man. It was pitch dark. I was scared. Like, I was legitimately scared. Oh, I mean, you've got a 100-plus pound bird.
Yeah.
Chasing you down the road.
And they're tall.
It was pitch dark, and he just popped out of a cornfield, like a random cornfield. So, yeah, you see the crazy things when you get to get out in nature every day. You know,
if nobody else would have been there, nobody believed you either.
No, I got a picture. So it's captured. Swiss Family Wild. Robinson stuff.
So just kind of circling back, I guess, to where we shot off there, you know, that's where I think it's super important for my mom. I mean, the heritage and history for our family in the outdoors, that you know, encompasses everything there. It's so much more than just the harvest.
That like epitomizes how someone should approach it, right? Like whether they eat meat or not, they appreciate the tradition. They appreciate the benefits from it.
Sure.
And
the conservation.
Yeah. And
aspect.
There's very few people like that, especially in today's world. Right. Like,
well, I remember. Yeah.
They have to like dig their foot in the ground and say like, oh, nope, this is everything about that's bad.
They don't know why it's bad though. That's the thing.
So it's just, and then on top of just as far as all the outside stuff goes, and I guess I'm kind of to this point too with hunting, you know, my mom does an awful lot on the education side, whether it's because she's a teacher for her main job and it's just what she's good at, or, you know, she feels called to do it. She does a lot of stuff with like hunter safety courses and things like that. And I've been able to help out with those too. Obviously COVID's kind of changed that. So we're gonna have to get back in the groove there. But it's more important to involve new people and to teach and pass that on, especially in the world that we live in today, where so many people have no idea where meat comes from, or, you know, the history behind hunting and how we as humans got to this point. I mean, there didn't always used to be a grocery store that you could just go buy meat or groceries at, you know. I mean, you had to be good at harvesting game to survive.
Yeah.
Yeah. So you've got this kind of deep tradition through your great grandpa and your mom, and now it's you, and you're kind of, you know, you're trying to get some youth involved in your in hunts and getting youth out. So you've got that coming up soon, right?
Yeah. Yeah. So last weekend actually, there was the youth deer hunt, and I took a youth hunter out Saturday and Sunday. I planned on one, obviously, just in case something happened and we didn't shoot a deer on the first day. But I took, I think he was 11 or 12, Jackson. He shot a real nice doe within about an hour of being in the blind.
Oh, nice.
And honestly, I mean, the youth hunt's a great thing, but like my first year was a doe, so I think it's important mm-hmm. that we let those bucks keep going on for breeding and everything. Well,
just the, like, you have initial success, and that can really,
exactly.
You know, we do those learn to hunt programs, and it's
like, people's mindset, I think. So anyways, he shot a doe, and he was just ecstatic with it, obviously. Awesome. It was awesome. So, and it was so hot that day. It was like 85 mm-hmm. or 87 degrees when we shot it, and so I had already planned on that. I had a big cooler full of ice, so we literally took the cooler right to where we shot the deer within 10-15 minutes of shooting it, and I quartered it, and that baby was on ice, quartered out, you know, right there.
Wow.
So we didn't waste anything getting too hot or spoil or whatever you want to say. And then I took one of my good friends, his name's Kevin Doyle, he's a state trooper down around the Detroit area. We took his daughter Olivia out on Sunday afternoon.
Okay.
And we'd watched the weather, you know, and it was supposed to rain like all day Sunday, and he had to drive obviously 2 or 3 hours up here. He's like, what do we do? I was like, well, you know, if you guys are cool with it, I'll pack the blind, obviously. Well, if it's raining, we'll walk out and get set up, and it'll be nice and dry in the blind anyway. And whatever happens, happens. And fortunately, it worked out real well. We had, once they got up here, we shot the gun off the porch, get her comfortable and familiar with it and everything. And that all went pretty well. Obviously, it's intimidating for, you know, to be your first time shooting a deer. So I think that that education and becoming familiar with your, you know, weapon or firearm or bow or whatever it is important prior to the hunt, because you don't want to get out there and wound something or whatever.
Right.
So we hunted Sunday afternoon, and same thing, shot a real nice doe Sunday, and that was her first deer, and man, she was just stoked. And honestly, it was really cool, because not only did obviously she shoot a deer, but you know, to see this big manly man, I mean, Kevin, he's been a state trooper for as long as I've known him, and I mean, he's just a great guy. But to see him get emotional with his daughter, to share that moment, man, it kind of puts a tear in my eye right now.
Yeah, just because it's locked in and you got to be a part of it.
Yep. And you know, you don't forget those things. And that's why for me every year for things like the youth hunt, you know, I'm only 24, so I'm not that old. And the youth hunt was, you know, not that long ago for me, but I've had a lot of hunts since then. So it's easy to get, you know, off track that's how I started out hunting.
Right.
And so now it's like I kind of feel called to continue, you know, that tradition of involving more youth every year. I try and take new kids every year so I don't end up with the same ones out shooting honey holes.
So you're relatively young. And now you've got this guide service, and you've had this guide service for how many years now? What year are you?
So we started Great Lakes Guided Outdoors in June of 2020.
Okay.
So this is year like two and a half or three-ish. Okay. But I'd been working at like other outfits for another about 3 or 4 years prior to that.
Okay.
And then, excuse me, even earlier than that, I started working with like disabled veteran organizations through high school. Like as soon as I could start like driving, I would start taking out these disabled vets, whether it be goose hunting with Waterfowlers for Warriors, or we did a bunch of turkey hunts with Operation Injured Soldier.
Awesome.
You know, we do 6 or 8 turkey hunts a year and a handful of goose hunts every year with full groups of guys. You know, so that teaches you to accommodate other people's needs, you know, and put other people before yourself.
And think about everything, right? Like, because we, you know, those learn to hunt programs, you don't know who you're getting, and some they have different physical fitness levels.
Sure.
Right? Like, can they get back to this property, or do we got to go, you know, make a shift and go hunt this easier accessible property?
So that was kind of where I guess I cut my teeth of understanding, you know, what people's needs are and how to best serve other people. And that's where I think a lot of guides and outfits may go wrong in the beginning years, because you think that it's just about the hunt, and it's really, the hunt is almost the last thing on the level of, or tier of importance. I mean, it's a customer service industry more than anything. Mm-hmm. You know, you have to be able to cater to people's needs and listen. And sometimes, I mean, there's some requests that you're like, whew, that's out there. But but at the end of the day, it's not my job to turn my head at, you know, at what somebody else needs. It's my job to go out of my way and provide whatever it is they need and then some, and exceed their expectations. Or else, hopefully, if I don't do that, they go somewhere else, because they deserve the best service they can get.
Yeah.
So that's all we shoot to provide.
That is, it's cool to see kind of how you were brought up, you know, with your mom, hunting with your mom, and then she was a teacher, and then to see kind of her teaching gene, let's call it, you know, kind of morph into you and to your personality, and you would rather teach someone rather than, you know, kill that bird or whatever it may be. And to have that experience that you had with, you know, the state trooper and his daughter, it's a really cool experience, because so many people look at it, it's so shallow, and you're looking at the big picture and just soaking in every aspect and every facet of the hunting industry.
Right. And I think, if I may, I think this is probably a good time to shoot towards the like lifestyle, I guess, of where this is going. Because as far as that education and everything goes, to me, I really don't think anything of it, because it's just, it's my day-to-day life. Yeah, it's just, I wake up and I live and breathe everything about it. So until somebody, or until there's an opportunity that I need to teach or, you know, to talk, I don't really think anything to go that way. But that's just where it's, when you're outside every single day in and around wildlife, you know, you notice so many different things that, you know, the average person that's just driving by might not see that very subtle change. And you're like, well, what caused this? Was it the weather? Did a farmer drive out here yesterday with a tractor and change something or bump this or that?
Yeah. It's a constant problem solving.
Yeah. Right?
Well, yeah. We wanted to, not many people would have seen the grouse and woodcock we saw today when we walked through. Wild.
Yeah.
Yeah. The first couple weeks of season, you know, of grouse and woodcock and stuff like that, it's so thick. You know, you can hardly see your hand in front of your face walking through the woods.
Yeah. To give some reference, we're recording this on opening day of grouse and woodcock season here in Michigan. And three of us, you know, Kai, myself, and Eric Schaefer, we all went out this morning. And so that's, if we're referencing that, that's what we're talking about. It was, you know, full leaf on. It's a tough time to be out there breaking brush, but we had some fun this morning.
Worth it. Yeah. Definitely.
Do you get an opportunity to get out and do any of that other types of hunting? Or is it, because we're kind of talking about this guide life, right? Like what that means. I don't want to necessarily use the term grind, but do you get the opportunity to just go out and have your own fun hunts? Or is it so busy that you're just like, by the time you get any free time, you're like, nah, I need a break.
As a business, you know, looking at it from that side of things, you know, you hope that you don't have any days off. And so that's where, you know, I do put as much work in the off season as I can, you know, trying to be prepared as far as just bookings go, so that I don't have the excuse to be like, well, we have 6 days in a row off, so we might as well go fun hunt. You know, so pretty much at this point, I mean, we had like maybe 1 or 2 days open in the entire month of September. And even like a quote unquote day off, to me, I don't look at it as a day off, because I see the list of things that need to be done that I've neglected because we've been humping so hard for however many days in a row it's been, whether it be, you know, a part on a truck that needs replaced or an oil change or tires rotated, something simple like that, or, you know, well, this landowner lives 2 hours away. You know, we've been trying to get down there and talk to him, you know, take a trip, go do that. Or like yesterday, you know, I spent almost all day just working on decoys and putting new, you know, elastic legs on decoys and, you know, new bags on this, or tidy and organized trailers and just all the stuff that you don't have time to do. Because, you know, our normal day to day, I mean, I wake up at 3 or 4 o'clock every single day, and, you know, you hook up to the trailer the night before, you roll out that morning, drive to the field, we set everything up but prior to clients showing up, and then we go meet the clients and take them to the field. And once you're done hunting, it may be, you know, 8 o'clock if you shoot a limit quick. More than likely there's a lot of shooting and not much killing going on, and it's a full morning extravaganza, which is fine. Yeah. But you know, we're normally picked up and out of the field by 11 noon, 1 at the very latest if it's cloudy or something. But then you know, you spend the rest of the day, you know, going out to eat with them or cooking together or whatever the case may be. By the time you're done with that, it's like, well, time to fill the truck up with gas again and go scout.
Yeah.
And by the time you're done scouting, at this point, the days are pretty long. It's almost 9 o'clock. You know, at that point, I'm on the phone with Paul and Zach and any Corey that's out scouting with me. We're not together, but out on the roads and trying to come up with our plan for, you know, the next day so we can let the next group know. And at that point, it's just balls to the wall, reloading a trailer. Mm-hmm. You know, if something broke that morning, well, we got to fix it or charge it or whatever the case may be. Just go, go, go. granted, we still haven't eaten dinner, you know? So now by the time you get everything loaded and ready to rock and roll, maybe 10 o'clock, 11 o'clock, you're like, well, are we hungry? Do we want to just go to bed? But usually we'll eat dinner, you know, sometime between 9 and 10-ish. And by the time we're in bed, you know, and everything's ready for the next day, it might be midnight, you know, and then you sleep for 3-4 hours-ish and you're back at it again.
Yeah.
And that's the biggest
thing.
It's
a young man's game.
Yeah.
It's just, you don't get any time to take a breath, you know, and I guess when you get in it, it's just a different mindset. You just have to go.
Right.
And I don't think anything else of it at this point because you just, you just go.
Yeah. So you're not getting out and you're not like, going fishing and going grouse hunting.
Right. Like, so obviously there's a pond at the property here. Yeah. And so I'll look out and Zach will be fishing in the pond. And I'm like, as I'm doing a little project or something, I'm like, come on, dude, there's a whole entire list of things we got to get done. But everybody works so hard that it's important that everybody take a breather and take some time for themselves. So I try not to bite down on people too hard. But as far as what the original question was of fun hunting or time off or anything like that, it's pretty tough this time of year to get any time to do anything like that, which is fine because, I mean, it's what I signed up for, so I'm not complaining at all. If I get the chance to go, I will. I might load up the goose chairs and go hunt, you know, and do something different and unconventional. Excuse me. Yeah. But it doesn't happen very often because we're running, like I said, at least one group almost every day, if not two or three groups a day. So we're pretty busy there. But I'd say like my personal fun hunting is coyote hunting in the off season. I just get such a kick out of that, whether it's me behind the gun or watching somebody else, because it's just something so different that many people haven't ever hunted with a thermal to see, you know, what's going on there. So I do that a lot through the summer months and any chance I get through the winter even. And then I really enjoy pike spearing, so I do that a lot too. Oh, cool. in between my, you know, end of winter guiding and turkey season.
Right, because up here you actually get a decent ice season.
Sure,
right?
And it's a lot different even than growing up, because I mean, I remember growing up and we'd have 30 plus inches of ice on almost every lake, and anymore, I mean, we're lucky to see 2 feet, which you think like, okay, maybe 6 or 8 inches of ice, you know, fluctuations, not that much. But to think about
it,
what
comes
it actually
off a lot
makes,
earlier.
Right. You know? Not only does it come off earlier, but it's just not getting as cold as it was. Mm-hmm. It's not snowing as much here as it used to be. And I'm not like trying to say, oh, global warming.
Yeah.
Like, oh.
Whatever.
I
mean, it's just where we're at, right? Yeah. Like the reality is it's warmer.
Sure.
Right?
So the winters are just a little bit, you know, more mild than I remember growing up. And I mean, even just with anything else, I mean, people that snowmobile, I mean, it's hard to even ride snowmobiles here because it might snow a foot and then it'll be 50 degrees and it'll melt half the snow. And it's all crappy, heavy snow. People don't want to ride on that. So they'll trailer up to the UP or go to Canada or whatever. And it's just not like it was growing up.
Yeah. It's like down, you know, Southwest Michigan, you might have like, you might not even get safe ice on some lakes till mid-January.
Oh, easy.
You know?
Yeah.
And then you're off them by March.
And then it rains or something weird in the winter.
You get like 30 days.
Yeah.
Right? On some of these lakes.
I remember I fished a lake downstate. It was probably end of January when we had a warm-up. And I'd like fished like every day that week. And then it literally rained or something. And all the snow on top melted. And I went and I punched my first hole because I was going to punch a spearing hole, which is going to be the size of this table basically. As soon as I pulled the auger out, it was just like a freaking fountain, just like just whoosh of water just coming up from under the lake. I'm like, oh, this is not good.
yeah it's just it's almost not worth it. I mean, those industries have got to be hurting, you know, or at least down here.
Sure. And really, like around here, I mean, ORVing and side-by-sides and all that stuff, I mean, that's a big part of our summer tourism, you know, people that come quote-unquote up north. I think that's a funny saying.
Like what?
Like where is up north? Can somebody tell me where the line is?
Yeah, well, I'll tell you where the line is. It's when they start slowing way down at any of the fast food restaurants, which is typically, no offense to Big Rapids, White Cloud, like that line. But when you go to the fast food restaurant,
it's the rifle line.
And they either,
it's the rifle line.
Yeah, like you get your food slower and it's usually wrong. Like there's a line there.
Yeah.
I know this may be offensive. driving north.
Yeah. So, you know, so anyways, up north, I mean, it's literally a migration of people every weekend, I think, like on the expressways. But either way, there's a lot of people that come up here that contribute to our local economies. And so it's a good thing. But at the same time, if they're not coming up here to ride some mobiles or ice fish or whatever like they used to, there's got to be a hit going on somewhere.
Yeah, because they may still have places up here that they travel to, but like, what are they doing?
Right?
Like they're spending less money at the gas stations, less money in other town, you know, like pit stops and things like that. Sure. So, yeah, I mean, me personally, I'd rather live up here.
Yeah, and have less people.
Oh, yeah. Oh, I mean, I just got to drive you guys nuts. I mean, deep down, it's driving up, especially when you get into like, you know, north of your Mayo, which is like a pass through town kind of thing, where it just, it could
be a lot worse. Cause I mean, with as many places as I've traveled, like there's a lot of places that you go and you'll hear about like Indiana, Illinois, Wisconsin area. You hear people talking about FIPS or whatever, you know, I won't say it on here, but it stands for something, you know, like I don't have anything bad to say about people from downstate. The only difference that I can notice, like, between growing up here and living downstate for, you know, a handful of years in and out of college and other reasons that I've lived downstate. I won't go into that too deeply, but, you know, just interacting with people at a store, like we'll just say you go into Walmart, like up here, like I might only need a gallon of milk and some eggs. I'll go into Walmart. Next thing you know, like it's like a high school reunion, you know, like you talk to 15 different people and it, you know, you talk to Farmer John and, you know, Uncle Ricky and yada, yada, yada. And everybody just, you know, it's a very tight-knit community, and there's a lot of layers in a very good way.
That's cool.
And even just another thing this weekend, we had a benefit dinner that we donated a couple hunts to for one of my good friends that I've known for a long time that has cancer. And just going to an event like that, like just it's very heartwarming to know that we live in a community that cares about every single person here, no matter who they are. Granted, Bobby, the guy the benefit was for, he's done a lot for our community, and so it really shows. But it doesn't matter if it was him or me or anybody else in this community. We all come together, especially in hard times. But you go downstate and it's like you walk into Walmart or Meijer or whatever, and it's like people have blinders on. Like they walk in, they
don't care.
Get their groceries as fast as they can. They don't want to talk at anyone.
I'm okay with the like talking. Just don't look in my cart, and I'll promise not to look in your cart. Like that's off.
Why is that a problem?
It's almost to me. It's almost like a peeping Tom. Like,
really?
I'm going to look into what you got, like, and then, like, I don't know. I just feel, I don't do that. I avert my eyes from their cart, like, intentionally.
Yeah. Why do you have hemorrhoid cream in there, Corey? Come on.
Exactly, right? Like, there's a lot of things that could go through someone's mind by just checking out the cart.
Has this happened to you, Corey?
Yeah, for sure. And then you're like rolling away. You're like,
though,
why was that person just like
sneaky
eagle eye in my cart? Like, what's. Right. And then you're.
I do not have all these cleaning products in my cart to make meth, I swear.
Yeah.
You know, it's a personal thing. I'm just.
But it's not that person. You're admired, man.
No, I know. But that's my thing. I'm saying it's like my personal view of it. I don't expect everybody to.
Do you think you need to
I'm
see usually, a counselor for this?
Yeah. No, I've got it figured
like,
out. It's okay in my head.
What are you buying?
Nothing.
Then
nothing that I'm worried about, but it's just like
that's
you don't understand that? You can't see like
unless I was buying something like
you just need to go to Walmart hour, like at 8 o'clock when they open. Like
no, that's why you only use a U-scan. You don't even want the cashier to know what you're
buying.
They'll
all forget what was in your cart by the time they walk out of the store.
But think about it like this. They know your diet. Right? Like right off the, wow, that guy drinks a lot of pop. Must not care about his health.
Possibly, but I don't buy pop.
Hey, what if there's 2/5 of liquor in that cart?
Then I'm going to have a party.
Yeah, so it's funny you say that. I was just checking out the other day when we stocked up for the season here a little bit. I went in, I bought a bunch of, you know, frozen pizzas and hot dogs and just quick meals for us here. I was saying, I mean, granted, we do eat pretty well. We'll cook some steaks and have good big breakfasts and stuff. But, I mean, we didn't have the healthiest assortment, and the lady behind me, actually, she called me out.
That's really?
Now that you say this.
Yeah, it's constant judgment.
She goes, she's like, what? You guys having a party? And she's like 50, 55. I was like, I literally told her, I'm like, I just go with it. I was like, you know, yeah, you want the address? Like, you know, just pull up. You're going to be busting it before you know it. But, I mean, it doesn't weird me out at all, you know? Yeah. Like, whatever.
Well, but I guess why does it matter to them?
Yeah.
It's like, it's the small talk. It's just.
No, I'm just saying I'm okay with running into someone in the grocery store. Just avert your eyes
from
each other's
cart.
Like that's perfectly fine.
I'm gonna get you a shirt.
We're good.
Don't look at my.
It's kind of like when someone jumps in your vehicle and you weren't prepared for them to be in your vehicle? And you're like, yeah, it's normally not this messy.
Mine is always dirty, so I'll never say that.
You feel like they're like, this is a glimpse into what your house looks like.
I'm so OCD about so many things in my life, and a truck is just one thing I've had to just learn that, like, I can clean it one day and it will be dirty the next day, because by the time I got, you know, different guides and freaking dog, dirty dogs, you know, in and out, and
it's not worth it.
No, it's just not.
So, like, obviously you're doing turkey guiding, you're doing goose and duck.
Anything else?
Is there anything else you're doing, like, here in Michigan?
We kind of have started to run a few trips for, like, coyotes and bike spearing and stuff like that, just because, like, I don't know. I don't really push it a whole lot, because those are a couple of my things that I do enjoy being able to do. And I'm not saying that guiding ruins anything for me, because I still love to goose hunt, whether I'm with clients or by myself or with, you know, family or whatever. You know, we definitely will do that to fill a little bit of our time in the off season, quote unquote off season.
Right.
You don't really have an off season.
No, it's pretty much a year round commitment. I mean, by the time you start looking at how deep running an outfit really is, I mean, just like the personal relation side of things, dealing with property owners. I mean, if I only guided on state land, oh my gosh, it'd be so much easier. But, you know, by the time you have to figure out, okay, what property sold? Did somebody in the family unfortunately maybe pass away? Did it change the scope of how this property is going to be handled? You know, and then on top of that, you know, I mean, everybody knows, well, maybe not everybody knows, but farms are a lot of work. You know, it's countless hours around the clock. You know, is one of my farms shorthanded? Do I need to go pitch in, you know, help them drive tractor, milk cows, you know, shovel cow manure? Yeah. I mean, you name it, from the top to the bottom. I mean, I'm not a farmer. I will never say that I'm a farmer, but you can tell me, and I'm a fast learner, and I've pretty much done almost anything on a farm at this point, because I almost feel, I hate to say indebted, but I almost feel indebted that, you know, they've been so generous with me, and we always reimburse our farmers very fairly, but I think that it's very important that investment in your time and effort and energy is worth way more than any amount of money could ever be. So that's why I always tell anybody that we work with, you got my number, and I don't care if it's 12 o'clock in the afternoon or 12 o'clock at night, you know, you call me and I'll be there if you need me, because you know, they go so far out of their way to help us that it's worth it to me to do that for them. So
do you feel like the passion that you have for other people and the experiences that other people can experience through you kind of pushes you through the grind, per se, of doing it year round? Because you have to have some type of like additional just go switch, you know, that most people don't have.
Sure. I think I've heard it from a lot of people that, you know, if you only get your quote unquote high, you know, from guiding off of the hunting and the killing, you're going to burn out in like probably a week. Because, and maybe not, maybe a little longer than that, but you're not going to make it years or decades and you're not going to build a successful business.
Well, you're doing it for because, such a bigger reason than...
The hunting side of things, I mean, you pray to the good Lord that the conditions are right, and you know that you have wind every day to bird hunt, which you don't, and you have good hides and can drive in every field, and it's easy and nothing breaks. But that's just not the case.
Yeah.
So fortunately, you know, you do learn to build these relationships with people. And at this point, like we were just discussing prior to this podcast, you know, I look at my schedule and I see a lot of friends at this point and almost family. I say it's a family because a lot of these people, you know, you learn everything about them, their jobs, their hobbies, you know, how many kids they have, you know, what some of their family functions that they go to are, and what their favorite things to do are in their free time. And, you know, you end up talking with these people year round. And it opens a lot of doors of opportunity to travel, you know, with a lot of these clients or friends or family, whatever you want to call it. Even in my, again, quote, off season, you know, that you're able to network. And at that point, you almost forget that of where you even met and why you met, because you're so far off on this other cool island that you're hanging out and you're with, again, like I said, it's more of a family You know,
it's like, how did I get here?
The business relationship dissolves into a friendship. And so then it's like you forget about that it was a business.
Sure.
And it started out as a business transaction.
There's a fine line, because ultimately, like, some people turn their head to like what it costs to actually do stuff. And some people understand. And the ones that understand what everything costs, you know, you don't ever worry about, you know, them paying you or it being a business transaction anymore, because they understand that you spent $900 on fuel in the last 4 days to run 6 trucks on the road.
Yeah.
You know, they understand that's what they're paying for. They're not paying you for your service. Basically, they're just paying to cover my expense of what it costs and the lease fees and all the equipment that we're providing.
They may not have the time to be able to, but they still want to enjoy it. And
yes.
They understand that you've built that relationship.
But that's where, like, it's hard to say, like, they're a friend, because they are a friend, but at the same time, they are a customer too. So it's like you want to treat them like a friend, but you still have to maintain that business relationship with everybody. But again, you can't look at a person like a dollar sign either, because as soon as you start doing that, people are going to see, like, okay, this guy's in it for the wrong reasons, and that relationship's going
to
be gone.
Yeah, your motives have to be clean.
A lot of times friends want to support other friends. So even in a friend, like, they understand that the cost that goes into it, and they also, for them, they get value in supporting that.
Right. I agree. And I mean, especially, I mean, you notice other people that run businesses or own businesses or whatever, they're normally the ones that really understand what stuff costs, because they do it themselves.
Right.
So you get the two sides of the spectrum, where some people, you know, that you've known for maybe your whole life, they're like, well, we want to go on a goose hunt with you. You know, it looks all good and fun and everything. But then, you know, they're like, well, what's it cost? I'm like, well, you know, this is what it costs. And they're like, oh my gosh, that's ridiculous. You know, and then they kind of try and lowball you. And it's like, you just kind of politely have to be like,
I get that too.
Right. But that's where, like, when I talk to one of my friends that runs a business, or like, if I go on a guided hunt, I'm like, okay, well, this is what it costs. I'm not here to juice somebody down, for lack of better terms, and I need to be prepared to tip them for their services, because I would hope that somebody would do the same for me, because I know what it takes. Right. And it's never fair to expect that, you know, but at the same time, I do know if I'm going somewhere, I'm going to take care of somebody as best I can, because I know what legwork went in on their side on the back end.
So you've kind of discussed the different, you know, species you guide for. Do you have a favorite? Like, I mean, you've got to have a favorite. No, I mean, like, honest
again,
answers
I think,
only.
Yeah, honest answer, open book. I think it's hard to say, like, I've got one favorite, because we just discussed that it's really not about the killing at all. You know, I've been so fortunate to go so many different places. I mean. Yeah. To the ends of the earth, waterfowl hunting, you know, in Alaska and the Bering Sea, literally the end of the earth. It feels like a different planet when you step off the plane. Working up there for a season in Hawaii to shoot deer over there, and all over the continental U.S. as far as bird hunting and other hunting opportunities has been. You know, I've, like, my grandma and mom always tell me, they're like, you've been more places hunting than most people have in their whole life already in just a couple years. And, like,
you're 24.
That puts it in perspective. They're like, wow, like, a lot of people really haven't been that many places. But again, when I think about these things, I don't think about holding that king eider over the Bering Sea. Like, the memory is still fresh in my mind. I mean, a very photographic memory. I mean, I still can see it, smell it, taste it, you know, all those things. But more than anything, I mean, I remember the time and the people that I met there, you know, and the food that we ate and the culture that you experience there, and, you know, going to Hawaii and cooking that fresh killed axis on the beach, watching the sunset on the west side of Molokai, and going in on a Toyota Tacoma, you know, through these just super hairy trails, you know, and almost flipping, it felt like. You know, stuff like that. I mean, I remember the experience more than anything as far as the harvest goes. But I mean, I guess
I'm not talking harvest. I'm talking because there's some that I like. The harvest is almost insignificant.
Yeah.
But either the habitat, the landscape, the location, the challenge, all those things.
I'm like, not going to lie. If I could turkey hunt or guide turkey hunts all year round, oh my gosh, I'd be like, hey, all my Dave Smith Goose decoys are for sale right now.
Yeah, I'm the same way. There's something about the scouting that goes into it, the communication that goes into it, the different methods of...
Yeah, I mean, you could turkey hunt so many different ways and so many different places. Like you said, mm-hmm. the terrain and landscape and all the things that are entailed there. But I would have to say probably turkey hunting's one of my favorites. But really, you look at all the things that I guide, whether it's turkeys, ducks and geese, or we'll say coyotes at this point. There's a lot of the work of calling and fooling something. Mm-hmm. And I think, I guess I get a good kick out of that. And that really stokes my coals more than anything. When you can sit there and be like, wow, you know, this is how nature works. And you just completely fooled it. Because these things, we don't really think about it this way, but they have to fight to survive every right. single day outside. They're battling the elements. They don't have a bed to go sleep in under a roof with a furnace and a stocked
refrigerator. Not unless you're a raccoon or a possum.
Yeah, they got it made, it pretty man. Good. But, you know, like a turkey, for instance, I mean, they have everything against them from even before the time they hatch, right? I mean, their mom has to survive first off, and she had to hatch. but from the time they're an egg to hopefully they didn't get their nest raided and they might hatch and turn into a poult. And then the multiple weeks that they can't fly or however long that is, critters getting them on the ground and then, you know, growing up. I mean, the success rate of growing into an adult mature turkey is not very high.
What was that post in Iowa? Did you see that? It was like 3%.
Yeah, I'm sure. Less than 10% for sure.
100%. To get to adult or reproduce.
Whatever.
Okay.
But, you know, you think about all these things and all the hardships that they face and then to be able to be like, wow, they survived all of that and then I tricked them.
Yeah.
Pulled a sneaky on you. But again, at that point, I kind of sound like it's more about the kill because and it's a cool feeling in that moment. But then I remember very quickly, you know, all these times of killing a turkey and the significance of that actual harvest for the person I was with, you know, people that just jump up just ecstatic and they hug you, you know, and with tears in their eyes that, you know, they've never seen the show. I mean, it is a showdown, you know, when you're in the spring woods, watching the woods wake up in the morning or just from wintertime to springtime and the things that unfold in front of you. You don't see that inside. You don't see that on a phone. You don't see that on a reel on Instagram. That's all BS, you know. I mean,
all
put that thing down, take it out of your kids' hands and let them go run around in the woods, you know.
Yeah. On the ride up north, that's what we were talking about.
Yeah, and so we'll just say right here, sitting here at my house, I have horrible cell phone reception, horrible. And we're just so taught that our phones should always work, and we get mad when they don't, right?
Oh, yeah.
Like, we pay for this, you know.
It's one of my biggest wonders is why they don't have cell phone service everywhere on the face of the planet right now.
But either way,
you know, we're kind of in a little bit of a low spot on the way up the hill here, just at the north end of the property, it starts going up again. But the guys that are here that live with me, they're like, why don't you get Wi-Fi? I'm like, you don't recognize like how cool it is to come out here and not be able to use it.
Right.
You know, and don't get me wrong. It's inconvenient at times. Like if I have a important business phone call I have to make or something that I'm anticipating a call or whatever. Don't get me wrong. It's a pain then because it's like, well, I got to factor in an extra drive to town, which it's only, I don't know, 5 miles out here or whatever. No big deal. But either way, I'm like, look, we can sit here, take a breath, and just take it all in.
Maybe go to catch a trout if you want.
Exactly. Yeah. But it's even simpler than that. I mean, you don't need to do anything at all because we're just so hardwired. And, you know, we've been taught at this point that you always have to be going and doing something. Mm-hmm. And I'm so bad about it myself to even take a breath and do anything for me or relax or whatever. Like, people are like, you need to do yoga or you need to do this or that. I'm like, yeah, when do I have time? Well, you do have to make time. Yeah. But either way, whether I get to actually physically make, you know, 10 or 15 minutes of free time, probably not going to happen midday for me. Or at the end of the day when I, you know, I'm able to chill out, you know, it's nice to be able to just take a deep breath and not have to worry about
hear a chime on your phone.
Yep. And so I just kind of factor that into my day now. Like I just have to get my phone stuff done while I'm scouting. I have to have my pin sent out for the next day before I come out to the house. And that's that, you know, you just have to overcome and adapt and life goes on, but it's the nicest thing to not be able to use your phone out here.
We got the pups running around the table.
Yeah, if we lose a cord, that's why.
So we not only took this one on the road, but we're also doing it kind of pseudo outdoors.
Yeah.
Yes.
This is kind of cool.
In the pavilion.
We intentionally chose that because we're like, yeah, we haven't done a podcast outdoors.
And the weather is perfect. So September 15th, you know.
Money.
That's money, dude.
Yeah.
No, it's awesome.
So we got the pup retrieving stuff. What's this? Which dog do you got here?
So right here, we've got Doug. He's from Southern Oak Kennels North in Athens. Don called me he didn't call me. There's that SRS event down at Brandon's property in Three Rivers or White Pigeon, okay, whatever you call it. I went down there and helped him throw birds for that. And so like last year, I had Ashley up here, one of their females from the kennel that they breed. But she's actually having puppies, I guess, shortly. So she's got puppies inside of her. So she's not in the right health to be hunting right now. Okay. So she's tied up, and then they actually sent Doug up here with us. So Doug's about a year and a half old, male. I guess they brought him over when he was a pup from England. I'm not sure how old he was when he showed up, but Don, Wally, and Cody, mostly probably Cody and Wally, did most of the training, I would have to imagine, with Doug. And man, he's a clean running unit, that's for sure. Okay.
And then you've got a pup of your own.
Yeah, so it's actually kind of a cool story. I was spearing this winter downstate. It would have been, I remember it, February 11th, and I stuck a 41 incher that morning, and another one was like high 30s, 36, 38 or so.
That's a toad.
Yeah. I don't know. I not to like sound arrogant, but I've speared a lot of big fish, and I don't have any interest in spearing anything small anymore. So yeah, if it's not mid 30s or up, I'm not chucking the spear at them anymore. So, but I speared a limit of high 30 inch fish a lot of days last year, and a couple over 40. I think we had three or four over 40. But anyways, February 11th, I had speared my limit by, I don't know, 11 or so. And I knew the puppies were coming soon because Ash was, you know, she was getting close. And as I'm literally skinning this 41-inch pike for the taxidermist so I didn't have to freeze this whole fish, yeah. my phone rings. So I got pike slime just everywhere, you know. And Angela Collier calls me and she's like, hey, it's going down. You need to get here. And I was about 20 or 30 minutes from the kennel. I'm like, how much time do I got? She's like, well, it's happening now.
Because you wanted to be there.
Yeah.
Like,
yep,
okay.
Yep.
Okay. So you had already kind of planned like that. That's why you were downstate.
I told her, I was like, please let me know, you know, and I checked in on her as much as I could, you know. But Ash is a very special dog, you know, to me. I've known her since I've known Don and Wally, really. So it's been, I think Ash is 6 or 7, and that's about how long ago I would have met Don and Wally, oh, cool, right as they were in the very beginning phases of Southern Oak Kennels North. Yeah. And they used to come up and hunt with me probably 3 or 4 days a week. They'd make that drive up here.
No way.
So, yeah. So we used to hunt together a lot. And so they would bring Hank and Ash up here before they had any other dogs. I think they had Belle at that point, maybe. But
what was...
So
was
Ashley's the first female that they had?
I'm not sure what the timeline is, but it'd be close. Okay. It would have been close. So anyways, you know, they used to bring Ash up to hunt with me then. And then like... I think it was the following season, so she was maybe 2. I hunted her for almost an entire season up here with us, and that would have been when we were like doing a ton of the like waterfowlers for warriors and the disabled vet hunts that season, probably at least 3 or 4 days a week too. But anyways, I hunted her that season, and I think maybe one other one, and then last fall I had Ash again. So she's just a, you know, a dog that's pretty near and dear at this point. She spent a lot of days in the field with us, and she's a little cuddle bug. she's a good girl.
Should see her. Should see her grandson.
Dog. Yeah,
her
yeah.
grandson.
Oh he's, yeah.
He's not as much of a cuddler.
Sure.
Who's that?
It would be Roosevelt, right?
Oh, Roosevelt. Yeah. Oh, okay.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. Yeah.
So anyways, you know, I got a lot of history there with Ashley over the, you know, last 5 or 6 years. And so I just, you know, was in touch with Angela. I was like, hey, you know, please let me know. And she's like, oh, of course. So anyways, my phone rings while I'm halfway through skinning this pike, and she's like, hey, it's going down. excuse me, you need to get here. And I'm like, well, you know, how long do I got? She's like, oh, right now. I'm like, oh, I'll be done with this fish in about probably 20 minutes and I'll be on my way. And I fortunately made it just in time as Ash was digging her way through the whelping box, you know, trying to get ready to push the first puppy out. And really? I actually got to help Angela, you know, deliver the puppies.
Wow. Awesome.
And get them into the little puppy. It's not an incubator. It's like a little warming chamber or whatever to dry them off and everything. And so I actually have a picture holding Sayla literally, you know, a minute after she came out of the womb. And then obviously over the next couple of weeks as she, you know, nursed, I would check back in and see how things were going. And I got a couple more pictures over the next couple
Sayla
of weeks.
Is like S-A-L-E-H?
No, it's actually, it's S-E-L-O-U-G-H. Yeah.
Say laugh.
S-E-L-A-H. Yep. So it's actually the name of a Christian band, but it's like a religious saying. So.
Yes. Yeah, I was thinking, I got the A and the E switched around.
So it actually means...
My daughter just told me what it meant literally a week ago.
Really?
That's why the name, I was trying to figure, is it...
Yeah, there's a lot of different interpretations depending on how you want to take it, but one wording is like to stop and listen, and kind of like, you know, meaning to take in your surroundings, like stop and listen. So like I was just saying, like out here at this place, stop, listen, which I think, you know, the more times you sit and stop, like you're like, okay, why am I in this moment? Yes. Yeah. Why am I in this moment? Like, am I missing something that I'm supposed to be picking up on? Or I think there's significance to times like that.
Everyone needs it.
Yes.
Everyone's so fast and furious.
And so I think that maybe this is one of those times where there's something big that I don't need to miss out on, and it's time to stop, sit, and listen. But another interpretation, which probably stems from the Christian band, is it's like a musical medley, like a pause and then like a musical, you know, melody or whatever, something like that.
I want to say that was her reference.
Sure.
Because it was, I think she, maybe it was longer ago, it seems like she was coming out of camp, like she'd been at Radiant Camp. Kids camp.
Sure.
And she came out and they do a lot of worship there. So it might have been something in reference to that. I should have listened.
Let me see.
You should have been still and listened to your daughter.
Sayla.
How ironic, right?
Huh. Yeah. It's literally the definition of what you did not do.
That pretty much sums up most of my life.
That's all right. You know what? You're learning, Corey.
I'm willing to admit these.
I know. So am I.
If I may, I'll cut in here. This is like the literal interpretation. It says stop, listen, pause, think, and meditate about it. So like, how about that? Think about that. It's used 74 times in the Bible. And it can be used to indicate that there's a musical interlude or pause at that point in the psalm.
Okay.
It also can be interpreted to mean simply to praise, pause, and reflect upon what has just been said.
Oh, yeah, that's in the Psalms, and it's after each verse.
Yes.
Yeah, yeah.
So, I don't know, like, I've always struggled to think of a dog name, and that's, like, honestly a reason I didn't get a dog for a while, because I was like, I'm not going to get a dog if I don't know what I'm going to name it.
Yeah.
And maybe it's weird, but I mean, think about,
I think
how
that's
many
more
times
weird than
the grocery cart.
Yeah, the grocery cart thing.
Yeah, but how many times?
You're not going to get a dog and enjoy all the benefits that having a dog has just because you're like, you might screw up the name.
Just call him Dog.
Yeah.
You got Doug.
I won't claim the name. I won't claim the name there. But think about how many times you say, especially a dog's name. I mean, you say a dog's name more than you say a person's name. You know I mean? Like anytime I'm around, you know, somebody that you're around a lot, you don't necessarily say their name very often. Like it's almost weird. Like if somebody says my name, I'm like,
Connor. Hey.
Yeah.
Yeah. It'd be like if my wife was like, hey, Corey, you'd be like, what?
Yeah, am I in trouble? Like,
yeah. What's okay. Yeah. That's what I was going to say.
Yes, ma'am.
Where's the kennel at? Okay.
Yeah. I mean, that's true. You
are you going to rub my nose on that?
Yes, it's true. You do. I mean, you're constantly saying it.
So I guess like that's why I wanted to find something with more meaning than just a name.
Yeah.
Because you're going to have a dog for a long time. And honestly, I mean, a long time past their life, you reflect back on, you know, certain memories or things that you really liked or disliked about a dog. So I think that was
a very thoughtful name.
Like I'm talking hours and hours, like going through research of what I should name the dog, you know.
Wow. So, here's what I got for you. I got a Bruno, a Jake, and a Roosevelt.
Yep.
Really thoughtful, right?
I don't know what my next one will be. I got Hank, but that's just easy. I like single sit, like Kai.
Sure.
Single sit, just so I can like be quick with it.
Get after it.
Yeah, Roosevelt's kind of a bit long. Yeah. So my wife's gone to like Rose, and I'm like, yeah, but I can't break that from her. Like, it's already done deal. You know, it's two years in. It's not
Rosie.
Yeah, she'll say Rosie, Rose. And I'm like, just, I'm always Roosevelt the whole.
Poor dog. Well, I wanted to, I've been getting into coyote hunting a little bit, and I'm horrible. I don't know what I'm doing, and I didn't know if there's maybe some tactics that you could share or something. I don't know. I mean, what do you scout for coyotes, or do you just know?
I think, again, it almost just stems back to the lifestyle. Like, I've been around so many places so many times. We cover so much ground. It's like, okay, well,
you just know
I see a lot here usually, or I've killed a lot here accidentally in the past. You know, you're driving through, you see one, you're able to kill it, or you're out hunting something else and you kill one or whatever. You know, they obviously are opportunistic. You know, they have to go where there's food, where there's somewhere for them to live or stay, you know, have shelter, and where there's water, just like any other living, breathing thing.
Yeah.
And all these things can change. You know, if something gets logged off and their food source that was hiding in those woods moves, well, guess what? They're going to move. The pack's going to move. So, I think that there's a huge degree. I mean, if you're calling, you know, in the wrong area, for lack of better terms, you're barking up the wrong tree.
Well, do you, when it does come, because I'm assuming you're using e-collars or you mouth calls? Yep.
I pretty much just exclusively use an e-collar. I've had Fox Pros for a long time.
Is there like a certain sequence that you want to start with depending on the season? Like if you're, let's say, summer, or I've also heard like fresh cut hay fields or wheat fields, or like that's that next night you want to be out there.
Yeah, I mean, I think that definitely is a good opportunity. But again, I mean, if there's not a pack within, you know, 800 yards or a half a mile.
They're not showing up.
I mean, on a quiet night, maybe a little farther, maybe a mile, mile and a half. You know, yeah, you're wasting your time, you know. Okay. So I would say first order of importance is you want to find where there's some dogs.
Yeah.
You know, that's the biggest level of importance. And then as far as sequence and stuff goes, man, they're usually pretty curious critters, you know. I mean, you just don't want to overdo it, just like anything else. I mean, you walk out turkey hunting, you're like, yep, 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 and you're just turkey calling, yakking, you know, for 20 minutes straight. They're going to be like, yeah, nothing to see here. You know, somebody's got a concert going on over there and they want nothing to do with you. It's the same thing with coyote hunting, I think. You know, you just kind of have to pique their interest and curiosity just enough. Because, and again, if you call too much where, like, they know right where you're at, you know, they already have an upper hand on you coming in. It's already hard enough to see them coming in and playing the wind right. And, again, coyotes are probably one of the smartest things to kill in the woods, honestly. I mean, they're smarter than a turkey. They're smarter than a deer. They are incredibly into it, of what's going on out there. You know, when you can have more of a subtle approach to your calling and you're not in a rush with it, they're going to come in like looking and searching. Mm. And so at that point, now you as a hunter, you got the upper hand on the dog. So if you can kind of think of things that way where you're like, well, if I kill one, great, but I'm kind of just going out here to see what happens.
Okay.
You can't rush it. And again, I mean, calling in Michigan compared to killing coyotes other places in the country is incredibly hard. It really is. This is one of the hardest places I've ever killed coyotes or predators. I've hunted foxes and coyotes almost in every state that I've hunted in. And man, it's just one of those things. Like, you can go to Oklahoma, Texas, Kansas, you can flip the call on and it'll be like 2 minutes and you're like, oh geez,
no way.
I need more bullets in the gun.
what's the reason for that?
It's hard to say. I mean, maybe hunting pressure. Is it there's just more coyotes out there? Is there
less woods?
In a lot of places, yeah. is there more food source that can support more coyotes? I mean, it's anything, again, in nature. I mean, even having a biology degree, going to school and studying that and studying ecosystems and the way things work. I mean, if there's that many more coyotes, there has to be that much more stuff for them to eat, right? Or right. else they're going to...
So it's a population.
Sure. Thing. So yeah, I so just that... think, like, you go out there and you might drive 10 miles before you see another house. You know, there's less people. It's just more wild than here. And granted, that's not to say you don't go to Detroit and see a coyote run and down a side street
right.
again scavenging trash like a freaking raccoon, because they are there too. But I'm just saying, I mean, here in Michigan it's much more developed than a lot of other places, and so I just think there's probably a lot how do I want to say this, they're an elusive critter, right? They don't want to live in somebody's backyard. Obviously a city coyote is probably a little bit different case. They kind of had to adapt to be able to survive. If they can stay away from people, they're going to. So if they're going to push away into that huge national forest, if there's food there for them, they're probably gonna. So, and maybe that's something that I should
even
try.
Even if the foraging effort's a little bit more,
yeah,
they're gonna take that over being
pestered,
because there's some wildlife that will just go to whatever's the easiest foraging,
exactly,
right? Like a raccoon's a good example. Like
So that's the biggest thing I would say that's, you know, different here. But either way, I mean, if you're hunting in Michigan, I mean, I kind of go into every stand factoring in that I'm going to be there for at least an hour.
Okay.
And I hate it. Trust me. It's like turkey hunting too. Like I'll slide in on a bird and it's like, man, I've been here for so long.
I've heard 20 minutes.
Coyotes?
Yeah.
And maybe so. I mean, don't get me wrong. I mean, I've killed coyotes in Michigan. Last week we killed one a minute and a half into the stand and you're like, the truck is right there. The truck is like 20 yards from me.
That's
you
wild.
I literally just slammed a truck door. Granted, slam it, but yeah. I drove a diesel truck in here, and I'm lazy when I coyote hunt. I'm not walking across the field. No, it's dark out. I'm parking. Yeah. I'll park my truck right next to where I'm hunting. I might walk 50 yards, and I'll set the call out, and we'll call from probably within 50 or 100 yards of the truck. So, I mean, it's within sight distance. It's right there. But it's like I literally drove in here with my headlights on, and I just turned the call on, and you just came running out, and I shot you. So it's not that it can't happen, but it's the same thing with turkey hunting. I mean, there's days that you go in the turkey woods and next thing you know, you shot a turkey by freaking 6:15. It's like, well, or 6:30 or whatever. It's like legal light was just 2 minutes ago and we're already done. Yeah. And then there's other days where, you know, you strike a bird up and next thing you know, you haven't heard him in 20, 30 minutes, but you can hear him drumming and you're like, yeah, he's close.
Yeah.
And that's where, again, you kind of have to figure out, especially guiding, like on a short term. I got three days to get these two guys a turkey. It's like I don't want to waste an hour in the wrong spot, but I also don't want to leave too soon if I think this bird's got a chance of coming in.
Right.
So that's why with coyote hunting too, it's the same way. It's like, how many coyotes actually can hear me right now, and what are they waiting for? Am I calling too much? Not enough? Am I holding their attention? Are they curious enough to come check things out? Is the wind still right? Has anything shifted? You know, there's a lot of things that, again, rack through my mind that I don't really think twice about or would think to talk about like I am now, because it's like I just, you know, do it without thinking about it, you know, subconsciously. It's like, well, in order to, you know, be successful consistently, those are the things that you have to consider. So that's what I would say. Coyote hunting, you just can't be in a hurry. You know, it's like you call a little bit and you wait, and you call a little bit and you wait, because eventually you're going to call a little bit and wait. And then next thing you know, you're like, oh, we own, here we go.
Yeah.
And
it's hard. I have, not infrared or just the night vision. I mean, it's not thermal.
Sure.
So, I mean, makes it a little bit more difficult just cause I can't, but it's so clear, you know?
Absolutely.
It's just, it's any type of obstruction, you know, grasses, I can't see anything.
Right. It'll wash out with the IR.
Right.
And I guess like one thing too, excuse me, that, you need to consider, man, I lost my train of thought. Where are they going with that?
Coyotes,
IR.
Thermal.
Geez, oh, geez.
Well,
that's the grind, man.
I'll think of it. Yeah.
That's the grind. We're doing the same thing because we're going on 3.5 hours of sleep.
Yeah. Right. We'll do it again tonight.
No doubt.
Oh, Eric's just shaking his head. He's like, no, we're not.
He's like, no.
I will not be staying up tonight. I can promise you that.
No, I can feel my eyes getting glossy like by the moment.
Yeah.
But I'm awake, guys. I'm awake.
Oh, I know what I was going to say.
There it is.
I see we stalled. Yeah. Just
I knew I was going to get it. But that's where, again, just the amount of days that you spend outside calling and you start thinking like, okay, you have to think about it this way. Like what worked and what didn't and why, right?
Yeah.
You might not ever know the exact answer, but when you can start putting a pattern together, you know, you're going to consistently do better. And I guess like one thing, like starting out coyote hunting, I just pretty much did almost all, you know, prey sounds, rabbits and squirrels and birds and stuff like that. And I think I was very intimidated by using coyote vocalizations and like thinking like, okay, you should only use coyote vocalizations during the breeding season, like probably most people do.
Except you hear them year round.
Yeah, you hear them year round, right? And that's how they interact. And again, these packs, they're just like people. Some people like each other more than others probably. And especially coyotes, they don't want other coyotes coming in and hunting on their turf or whatever. They're pretty territorial, right? And that's why decoy dogging works so well. But, you know, once you can start listening to coyotes and get in close, and I mean, it makes the hair on the back of your neck stand up too. It's a cool thing. Yeah. Some people get freaked out, but I'm like, well, unless it's got rabies or something, I'll be all right.
Well, I mean, if you're a hunter, you've had close encounters.
You know,
I keep AR in your hand.
You know, I keep that thing on me. You know, once you can start learning more about coyote vocalizations and how they respond to them, I've really seen a lot more.
Really?
Consistent success and faster results in the field. And honestly, I mean, I hunted with a good buddy of mine, Seth Simpson, in Idaho with his decoy dogs. And he hunts coyotes way different than anybody I had ever.
My
animal.
Me being naive, but when you say decoy dogs.
Yeah. He's so literally it's a plastic dog that he's, I'm just kidding. He has these dogs that are trained to coyote hunt. And it's not like the conventional way of like, we're going to cut these greyhounds loose and they're going to go run that coyote down and kill it.
Yeah, like, my boot ticks have done that.
Because he'll post videos where the dogs are gnawing on a dead coyote. And I'm like, man, that just seems like extremely, extremely inhumane. But I was way wrong. And basically what they do is he gets a pack to fire up and hopefully we're pretty close. And then he just sends these decoy dogs. To go get
legitimate dogs.
Yeah, they're like he breeds these dogs specifically for it.
They're called decoy dogs because they look.
No. They're like the decoy for the coyote. Like they're like the bait, right?
Okay.
Like they're like the territory bait. Like they're going in to tick off that coyote and bring them to Seth.
Yep.
So he'll send them in basically to, you know, where their den is or where they were hunting or whatever the case may be. And then these coyotes get fired up and they try and chase the decoy dogs off. Well, the decoy dogs are coming right back to us because he's got collars on them that he can kind of, you know, he might vibrate them or tone them to have them come back. And here they come just running. And next thing you know, there's a pack of coyotes hot on their heels. How they never catch the decoy dogs, I don't know. I mean, they are so good at what they do. But man,
I've seen the videos.
The coolest thing is it's like at that point, you just stop and watch the show on the thermal because you don't have to kill the coyote. The coyotes, they don't care about you. They don't care about your smell. They don't care about where you're parked or what you're wearing. You just stand there. They're so ingrained in that dog that it'll be a 5, 10, 15, 20 minute show of them just, you know, growling, barking, biting, snapping teeth at each other, you know, hissing, just chasing these decoy dogs around. It's incredible.
I think decoy cats would work pretty well too.
I think a decoy cat would probably get gobbled. Yeah,
exactly. Well, I mean,
Right. But anyway, after hunting with Seth out there in Idaho, it kind of got my brain turning a little bit where I was like, you know, I don't have a decoy dog. And I just talked to him this past week. I was like, I can't do it right now, but within the next couple of years.
What are the breeds again?
He does it himself. Like it's his own thing. I don't know what they are. Breeding. Yeah. I don't know what they are.
He found a coyote pup and like literally raised
the thing.
He's
got one right now.
Does he?
Yep. So that was a weird deal. He had that one. I think her name was Kate, and he also had a baby badger. Oh man. What was his name?
This guy.
But anyways, Fish and Wildlife somehow got into that, and they like took the badger, even though he had permission to have him, they like took it from him. And so now,
really?
I don't know, somehow he must have another coyote because he's raising another female coyote pup right now. But anyways, so he breeds these dogs. They hunt them like that. And then where I was going with that is once you shoot the coyote, them chewing on the coyote is like their reward. It's kind of like with a bird dog, like us shooting the bird and them retrieving it. The retrieve is their reward for sitting there and being steady and marking the bird and going and retrieving it. that's their reward, is getting to be able to gnaw on it. So like after we shoot the coyote and go up there, he'll like make his little hiss noise that gets the dogs all fired up. Exactly. And next thing you know, he's like, yeah. get him. And like, that's their reward for doing their job right.
Okay.
So they didn't kill the coyote at all. I mean, we shot it humanely and it was dead in, you know, a fraction of a second, you know, just like me shooting one in a field with my rifle, but without the decoy dog. So, you know, after watching him and seeing how these dogs interacted, obviously I don't have a dog to go out and get the coyote and bring it back, but I was like, man, if I can, yeah, I just, you know, he's got his rabies shots and all, but I don't think Don and Wally would be too happy about that one. And some people use labs, they do, but anyways, I think it's important to have a dog be good at one thing.
Yeah.
But, you know, I started thinking like, okay, well, if it works so well to upset these coyotes that way, Doug wants to play fetch right now. It's not going to happen. You know, we need to try this in Michigan and see if I can fire up some dogs with some vocalizations. And that's when I started doing it a little more. And next thing you know, you put, you know, say a female challenge howl or growl or whatever, you know, you play that for a couple minutes and then you wait, shut the call off, mute it, wait. They heard it. Just wait.
Mm.
Couple minutes go by and then they go off.
Really?
Yep. Just wait. Like two minutes, 5 minutes,
delayed
10 minutes.
Gratification.
It might be. I'm serious. And so if a couple minutes go by and I don't get a response, might try it again and wait. Or try something else and see if I can get them fired up. And then at that point, if they respond, you know they heard the call and yeah, they heard what you're saying. You know, they might be buying what you're selling, but you don't know that yet. But if you don't get a response, maybe they did hear you, but they're just like, eh, whatever, you know. We just chased them off yesterday, you know, we're not going over there today. But if you don't get a response, you know, that's where I'm kind of like, well, I might shorten the stand a little bit, you know, and move on and see if I can fire up a different one. But as soon as I get one fired up, I'm going to wait. It's the same thing as a turkey. If I get a turkey to gobble, granted,
it sounded like your interactions, your timing of it was similar to what you're doing
with turkeys. Yeah, absolutely. And same thing. I mean, turkeys sometimes will gobble just to gobble, and sometimes they'll gobble to laugh at you and flip the middle finger because they saw you and you didn't know it. But they ain't coming in. They just not. But anyways, once I get, you know, either be it a pack or sometimes it's just one dog, you know, that'll either bark, howl, you know, whatever back. As soon as they get a response back, I'll kind of listen to what it sounds like. I can tell you if it's a male or female almost instantly when they go off. And I'm telling you, I'd bet money on it. If I call a dog in and I heard it, I'd got about a 95 or higher percent success rate that I could be like, yep, that's a male. Kill it, and you flip it over, and that thing's got some nuts on it. I'm telling you. And so where I'm going with that is you have to know what you're calling at. If it's a female and you know, or if it's a male and you just sound off a female, if he's not in the mood to chase down a female, he might not come in. But if you shout back at him with another male, he's like, oh, this guy, you know, he thinks he's tough. Well, I got it coming for him. Well, next thing you know, he comes in all hot and bothered and whammy, surprise. Huh. You know, you hear the fun switch go off and then they look at you and it's too late. He did. But I guess like that's just, again, you just have to go out
and do it.
Yeah. There's no video online or no seminar that you can go to that's going to teach you exactly what something sounds like. It's just not.
And I'm the type of person who doesn't like to learn that way anyway. Like even if it was easier, like
you'd rather look at somebody's shopping cart in the store and take notes there.
Yeah. It was just like, figure it out.
What aisle did you get that coyote hunting book in? If you don't mind me asking.
Yeah, what if you rolled up and they got a bunch of coyote urine or whatever their, you know, whatever the bait is in the car. You're going to start wondering and you're going to go down this long conversation about coyote hunting, right?
Sure.
You just wanted to go in and get
yourself
gonna
set a poll. We're going to set a poll about who is anxious about other people looking in their car.
It's not anxiety. It's about courtesy, all right? It's courtesy, not anxiety.
It's not like they're walking into your bedroom, man.
What do you got in your bedroom that you don't want people to see, Kai?
No. Yeah, I mean, people are welcome.
I just know what goes on in there. That's not going out in a grocery cart, I can tell you that.
Well, there's different levels of personal invasion, too.
All right.
Yep, we'll put a poll up.
I think we do.
Is the dog taking a swim?
Oh. We're good. Place.
I'll just keep eye contact.
Yeah. What was that?
It looks like a scrunchie. Kitchen scrubber, yeah.
Oh, I was going to say a hair scrunchie.
No.
Sure you don't got hair scrunchies just laying around?
Maybe in my shopping cart, but definitely not in my bedroom. That'd be so weird because Paul and Zach, our floor plan upstairs is just open. So, you know.
It's all
that'd be weird.
It's someone.
So yeah, maybe we'll switch. Have you covered all your coyote questions?
Yeah.
Do you have more coyote questions?
No. No, I don't. I'm excited to go back out now.
Yeah, and that's just the biggest thing of it. I mean, it doesn't matter if it's coyote hunting or goose hunting or turkey hunting.
I
definitely have learned more from other people that have done it and messed things up or, you know, seen different trends that they've shared with you. That's the fastest way to learn. I mean, just guiding, for instance, goose hunts, you know, going down and working at other operations and being surrounded with other people that have done it all over the country, you know, you learn so fast. Or in college, bass fishing, we had, you know, 30 some dudes on the bass team. They're from all over the country. Well, everybody has different fishing styles to succeed in other places. My, you know, realm of fishing knowledge just exploded in those couple of years. Excuse me, you know, being surrounded by that group of guys.
Yeah.
And it's the same thing, you know, me going other places. I mean, it's nothing that, you know, you should be a closed book about. And
yeah,
nothing that you should look down on somebody else either. I mean, just because they haven't seen it or done it yet, that's how you learn. That's how other people learn. It's how I learned. So why would I look down on somebody else for not knowing yet?
Yeah, they're not, like, things aren't directly transferable, right? That's what you learn real quick in the hunting and fishing world. It's like you can't take what you did in one location and expect to not have to make any adjustments or learn when you move, you know, move locations or
be in one or be in one place one day and the same place the next day and the weather changes and expect the same thing that worked yesterday fishing there to work or hunting there or whatever. I mean, granted, we aren't hunting the same place day in and day out, but you know, maybe you hunt it one day and like coyote hunting, I'll hunt a lot of the same spots, you know, but I won't hunt them but every couple weeks or every, you know, once a month or whatever. But, you know, you might do well on one certain sound or routine one time, and then you come back a month later and you're like, oh, this place is a ghost land.
Right.
But then, you know, maybe we talk about something today. Kai goes coyote hunting tomorrow night until 3 o'clock again or whatever.
We got coyotes.
But maybe he goes coyote hunting.
Coyotes.
Yeah, maybe he goes coyote hunting and learns something. And he's like, hey, you know, you said this. I tried something a little different that I think you might be able to benefit from, and this worked for me. Well, that just worked out in my benefit now because we both
learned something.
Yeah. Or this didn't work on this day. I'm like, well, if it didn't work then when it was this conditions, well, maybe I won't try it next time.
Right.
Yeah.
I'm going to give it a whirl. Not tonight.
Tonight?
No, not I mean, with a 28 gauge.
I mean,
oh, come on.
It's number 7 boss, though.
My favorite. Yeah. I mean, don't get me wrong. I love killing coyotes with a rifle and the thermal, but man, if I could kill them with a shotgun or a handgun every day, whoo.
Yeah. I mean, they got to be from here to that post.
Yeah.
With a shotgun? You can kill them out to like 50 or 60.
Well, yeah. But
you just got to shoot them more than one time.
Yeah.
Let them do the old sit and spin.
Sit and spin.
I've never seen that before either. I'll just have you.
Yeah,
know.
No.
You just heard about it. You saw it on YouTube.
It was that book that was in their cart. I saw it there.
So with this property that you just kind of picked up, you know, we're sitting outside and you got the...
How would you describe the location that we're sitting right now? We're in a... I mean, I see it as like a outdoor lounge space. What do you use it as?
I like it. We're gonna have to get a sign out here. I mean, Corey's lodge, outdoor lounge.
Yeah, I don't. What's a more churchy name for it? It's not a foyer.
A vestibule.
Vestibule.
No, the vestibule would be over there.
Yeah, I say patio, this is just a pavilion.
Covered pavilion. Yeah. There it is.
Covered pavilion.
That sounds French.
I shouldn't have said it so fast. Sounds I should French. Let it keep going. But I don't know. I guess this is just a pavilion. It's like
overlooking a nice. Is it stocked trout?
No, these are all natural, actually. They're all natural brook trout in the
pond.
What's
the size? Like, what are they?
Paul and Zach, I literally have not cast a line, and I've been so busy. But Paul and Zach have been fishing here almost every day, and they've caught some, 10 to 12-inch brook trout out of the pond.
Awesome.
So that's cool. I did actually make a couple calls to see what the stocking, process would look like, and I guess I need to get a permit from the DNR or something. They're like, it's free. I'm like, yeah, I'll believe that when I see it. Yeah. But I guess I have to get a stocking
it's
permit.
It's free. We just have to show up once a year and check on it.
No, and no,
Is it connected? It's connected to a river.
Yes, because it's connected to the river. If it wasn't, I don't think I would need it. But anyways, since it's stream fed or spring fed, whatever you want to say, and it spits out into the river, it's got to have a permit. So that's my next step. But I've been so busy. But I talked to a hatchery or whatever you want to call it, and got plans to get them here as soon as that's done.
What are you putting in?
I'd love to put some more trout in it. Rainbows, browns, and brookies probably.
Oh, nice.
And I guess this is one of those things too, that again, a little bit of my history as a kid, one of our good family friends had a pond that was stocked with brown trout. And my mom told me, I was probably like 8 or 10. She's like, if you ever catch one of those, we'll get it mounted. Cause she knew how big they were. I mean, I'm talking, these are like 25 to 30 inch browns and like 8 to 12 pounds. Like they're like freaks of nature. Right. And no exaggeration. And the only way I'm saying no exaggeration, cause I got one on the wall. It was just this long summer of going out to a hangers pond and fishing. And every time I'd hook up with one, and I had this little G.I. Joe rod, I'd snap my line off and I'd lose a lure. And so then I'd go home, do my chores, and I'd go buy more lures with my allowance. And then I'd go back out and fish again. And I'd hook into one and it'd break me off. And finally, by the end of summer, I actually caught one. And I'm like, well, we got to go to the taxidermist now. We got to find a taxidermist. And I still use the same taxidermist to this day. And that's where that big pike is at. But my mom's like, well, I didn't actually think you were going to catch one. Like, have a little faith, Mom. I didn't learn from the best here, but anyways, I think that it would be cool to have some real big browns swimming around out there just for the sake of me growing up and fishing. And at that point, it's not for me again. I'd have some kids out here fishing because I know how special that was for me and how cool that was.
I had a similar story, too. I remember growing up and I want to say I was probably between the ages of 9 and 11, somewhere in there. And we had family that was in like a assisted living facility or like a retirement community type thing. They had a stocked pond. They had rainbows in there, but these rainbows were getting massive. I mean, no one fished it. It was, I would say most of the trout in there would have been 26 plus inches. And they were like, no one catches, right? Like they just, no one can catch these fish. But I was kind of like you where I'm like, and I was a trout fisher as a little kid, trout fisherman. I'm like, I'm going in prepared. So I put like 20 pound test on, like way bigger than I had everything rigged up. So I knew I wasn't going to snap my line. I go in there, I'm casting like worms and spinners and stuff. Nothing. And I was like, you know what I'm going to try?
The tippy dam trick.
I don't know what the tippy dam trick, but here's mine. Kraft singles cheese.
Whoa.
Yeah. Took a piece of that, squashed it up, like balled it up on the hook.
Yeah.
First cast, boom. Second cast, boom. Then they kicked me off the pond.
No way.
Two monsters in a row.
Suffering from success.
Like, no more.
Kraft singles.
Yeah.
What do they think? Were they just being fed cheese, or do they think it was like an egg?
I think it was just something that was like it just triggered
them.
I who knows?
Yeah, I wonder if it looked like an egg or something.
I don't even know why I made that decision to do that
because
nothing else worked.
Had a Kraft single slice in your pocket. I got it.
Well, yeah, I mean, a sandwich was probably just a bread and cheese.
Yeah, I don't need this bologna and cheese. It's just bologna now. But I got my trout.
Oh man, I'll never forget that. But same type of experience, like as a little kid, and it kind of like getting your first big fish, and no matter how you got it, is like that gets locked in your mind.
Yeah, for sure.
And to have that out here in your backyard and be able to provide that for someone.
Well, so like eventually you said you're going to have clients here, right? At the other, because it's 15 acres, right? It's got a trout pond, this pavilion.
long term, I'm not exactly sure how everything's going to lay out.
I mean, you've been here, what, 2 weeks?
Yeah, not even. Yeah. So I need to get some tenants in the rental shortly within the next month or two. So if anybody wants a three bed, two bath rental with a nice trout pond in your backyard, let me know.
And you're in northeastern.
Yeah, in the northeast lower.
Up north, if you're north.
Oh, yeah, I tell you. Oh, she's got a great view up here. We just put in the boat. But anyways, get back on topic. After having the access to the lodge that we do right now, I don't know that I want to put clients here. Okay. Just, and I'm not saying that this is a bad place because that's perfect for what we need as far as staying here with guides and everything and hosting a few close friends. I mean, it's like you can see, I mean, it's awesome. I love it out here.
Yeah.
But I think I'll probably just rent that 3-bed, 2-bath out for a bit here, see how that goes. And then I got a little bit of work to do, obviously, just like any house. Once I get that stuff worked on, I'll probably end up starting to do some Airbnb stuff in the summertime.
Oh, cool.
Because, I mean, I'm pretty much on the road traveling all summer anyway. A lot of my work I need to do, I can do on my phone. And when I say like I'm helping farmers out and stuff, they just call me, so I just factor that into my schedule. I'm like, well, I just need to be back in town at this point or whatever. Excuse me. And, you know, the rest of the time I try and just live life and make some memories that I don't get to make while I'm guiding. And, again, don't get me wrong. I love guide season. I meet so many great people and get to build relationships with great people. But it's cool when you get to hit the road and see some new things, cultures, foods, music, whatever. I mean, that's what really makes hunting or fishing and traveling or just going on a trip really what it is.
Yeah. Well, good. Yeah, no, this is, it's an awesome spot.
But even, I guess, you know, having the little bit of ground that we've got here, I mean, there's definitely some thoughts that go through my mind as far as, you know, other things to do here and expansion and growth, and the sky's the limit. But it, you know, if it's here, great. If not, might be somewhere else. Mm-hmm. Who knows?
Right. Yeah, it's just cool that the guy kind of just reached out to you and said, hey, you want this thing or what? No, it's awesome. It's real cool. Yeah, we did. We had a little walkthrough before the podcast. So it's, thank you.
Yep. Is there anything you want to leave us with? Anything more that you're like, oh, I wish they would have asked me that question.
Man, I mean, this has been fun. I mean, if there's something I think of later, I mean, we'll have to just do another one.
Yeah. Right. We're not ashamed of doing repeats.
No, but I mean, if you didn't like me that much, just say it and hey. No feelings hurt. No, I'm just teasing. But I think we about covered it. I mean, hopefully goose season
flew
keeps
by.
Goose season keeps rocking and rolling.
Yeah.
Everybody, you know, stays safe and nothing breaks, which that will not happen. Things will break. But
so you're pretty much booked for through September, mm-hmm. you said. What do you have available again?
The one day I've got open September 29th.
Okay. And then you move into the duck season.
Yep. And we lose a week this year, so it's closed October 1st to 7th and reopens on the 8th.
And you've got spots?
Not early October. I think the only days I've got open in October is the 18th and 19th. And maybe one or two days at the end of the month.
I'm not aware of the, because you're a middle zone, right?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So you would typically start first Saturday.
I think like it's two things. Like this year they voted or whatever to push season back a week or something like that. I'm not super familiar.
No, we start the 15th.
Yeah. So anyways,
we do?
Yeah. So anyways, you guys are going to have season closed completely for like 2 weeks. And I don't know, does goose season reopen on the 8th for you guys down there? Or is it the 15th?
I got to look at 15th? My book.
I don't hunt South Zone that much, so I don't really know offhand. But either way, like I remember it had to have been 7 years ago or 6 years ago or whatever this happened where, you know, it was the last season was closed for however long. So it's a bummer because it generally is really great weather and perfect conditions for, you know, migrating geese, that the hunting is phenomenal. We didn't have a single day last year in that first week of October that I think we shot less than 35 or 40. It was just lights out.
Wow.
Yeah. Lights out.
Well, so, whenever changes happen, it's always like, it seems to be like what you didn't want to happen that year does happen.
Right.
You know, it's like the weather is not what you wanted it to be. That's just like, it seems to always occur that way. It was pretty common back before, you know, like before you were a waterfowl hunter for that to be closed down and to have that period of downtime between early goose. And
again, everything happens for a reason, for sake of, you know, the migration and birds and all that stuff. So, I mean, as a conservationist, you got to respect the rules and just understand, hey, this is just the way she goes. So I hate to complain and sound like, oh,
you got
to
break.
Kill.
Look at it like that. You got to break.
But it's just, it's tough when it's a short season, and that is generally such a good time.
Right. Yeah.
Oh, man. Gets my heart going. And
yeah.
All warm and fuzzy inside, you know?
Yeah, I mean, we just got to hang on to the hopes that we'll always have this liberal season.
Right.
I mean, that's not guaranteed either.
Right.
You know, so.
I will say this is something we didn't talk about. As soon as I'm done here, beginning of November, mid-November-ish, I do go to Oklahoma for a couple months. I'll be working down there
Awesome.
Through the end of January, I want to say.
Where, like, are you guiding, obviously.
Yeah. Yeah, so. No, I'm going to work as an ugly stripper.
Seriously, though.
People will be like, I'll pay you to put your clothes back. No, we'll be doing goose and duck hunts and then thermal hog and coyote hunts as well. And then there's also packages for helicopter hog hunts, too.
Awesome.
So there is a few dates available for that. I don't know them offhand, but if it's something that you're interested in, definitely get a hold of us because it's going to be a party.
And we'll put all your info.
Cool. But go ahead and say it. Great Lakes Guided Outdoors.
Yep.
Like,
so
what's the best way to get in contact with you?
The best way to get a hold of me at this point is just to call me. At this point, I mean, there's so many different inboxes to keep up on, and I'm not saying that because it's a bad thing. I mean, I love networking and talking to people, but it's tough to stay up on it when we're this busy. So if you send me a message and I don't respond for, you know, a day or two, it's because A, I don't have service the one time I would have time to check my phone when I go to bed. Or, you know, we're just slam packed busy. So if you need me, call me first thing, you know, and if I don't answer, leave me a voicemail. I will call you back. My phone number is 989-387-0952. So call, text, whatever, anytime. We can set up a time, get on a phone call that works for us. And that's, you know, best case. Or shoot us a message on Instagram, Facebook, whatever. Great Lakes Guided Outdoors. Good to go. Or email greatlakesguidedoutdoors@gmail.com.
Awesome. Yeah,
we'll
that up in the show notes. Yep. Yeah, for sure. Well, it's been a pleasure.
Yeah, it was great to meet you.
Absolutely.
Thanks for having us out to the pavilion here.
It's cool. You know, I mean, Eric and I have some history. We've gone on some cool trips and done some fun stuff together from Pike Spear and ice fishing and trips to Kansas and hunts here in Michigan a lot. And then I haven't seen Kai in three years.
Justin's.
Yeah.
Did we have a, I'm trying to think if we hunted together after that. I don't think we did.
Nope.
It was just Justin's. Yeah.
Yeah. So it's been a while.
It has. It flew by though.
Yeah.
You know,
life it's happens. Crazy. So definitely I'd love to get you guys up here and come hunt sometime.
Yeah.
I don't know what your schedules look like, but
this is my, I mean, like I said, I would rather live up here. I don't think my wife's willing to make that transition yet, but like, it's
You got that 3-bedroom, 2-bath.
Come on, baby, pull up.
Yeah, we'll live there, and then we'll be like, oh, we're going up north to the cabin.
Yeah,
and then I'll just have
35
to sit here
minutes
and be
like,
away. Gosh, got horrible tenants. This guy over here.
All those brown trout would be out of that pond like the day
the
after.
Smoker's
you stock
always
them.
Running. He's out working in the workshop, grinding on stuff all night long.
I got 3 rods in the water at all times.
Yeah, that's
with
right.
With lapels.
And the craft singles, right?
Just popping coyotes out the back door.
Most places are like artificial bait only. The fishing signs here just say no cheese.
No cheese. Perfect. Well, that was good. Yeah, thank you again. It's been a pleasure. Yeah, it's been fun.
Cool. Well, hopefully you guys have some good walking tomorrow and put some birds up.
I mean, I'd be happy with what we did this morning.
Absolutely.
If we could replicate that.
Cool.
Yeah.
Well, thank you, Connor.
Yeah,
absolutely.
Appreciate it.
All right. Talk to you.